Chapter 24. Forms. Dolorum zigzagged a nonsensical path through town to foil anyone searching for them on their last known route. They stopped for a while behind a gas station so they could search the SUV more thoroughly. Trace clambered around in the cabin, groaning every time he twisted his old, stiff back. He searched under seats and in pockets to make sure nothing remained that might allow the dreads to use GPS to find them. Dolorum checked the engine compartment and the undercarriage for any other signs of tracking equipment. They both came up empty. The cargo section of the SUV was loaded with enough dread rifles and ammunition to start a small war. Dolorum whistled through his teeth when he saw them. "Times are changing," he said. Trace settled into a seat, fumbling to find the seatbelt in the low light. "I wouldn't know. It's been hell ever since I showed up." Once convinced they were clean, Dolorum drove away at a conscientious speed. "I don't think I could explain to a cop why a geek with a bullet crater in his shoulder and an old guy are traveling around with two katanas and a bunch of guns in the middle of the night." Trace chuckled. "It'd be fun to watch you try." The pinks and blues of dawn spread their wings above the horizon as they skirted around the empty guard station at Lake Pleasant and headed toward the public use beach where Cassandra had taken him after saving Priscilla. Ahead in the parking area sat Cassandra's caddy, Goldbow's Taurus, and Lear's Buick. Even with his poor eyes, Trace could make out the silhouette of all the vehicle's owners on the beach, facing east. They briefly glanced at the new car before resuming their vigil. Then it hit him. They were mourning his passing. Trace grinned and situated the satchel over his shoulder. This would be fun. Dolorum parked the SUV and helped him out of the car, offering his arm for support as Trace's hunched frame negotiated the rocks in the pre-dawn gloom. Again, Trace's Ash Angel friends turned, but then continued talking among themselves in low tones Trace couldn't make out with ears as bad as his eyes. Dolorum's face was split in a wide grin, and they walked up and stood at the end of the line facing the lake. As they approached, Trace thought his eyes might have failed him completely. Cassandra was leaning her head on Goldbow's shoulder.
"Anybody here missing a gigantic hard drive?" Trace asked, sounding so old mannish he hardly recognized himself.
He tossed the satchel to the ground. Priscilla, Goldbow, Corinth, Lear, and Cassandra gaped in disbelief. Cassandra left Goldbow to stand in front of him, her face brightening with wonder.
"Jarhead? No way."
She hugged him fiercely, popping his ancient bones, before stepping back.
"But that is the best morph you've ever done, you jerk."
She wiped her eyes while trying to look like she wasn't wiping her eyes.
"It's not a morph," Dolorum explained. "A dread afflicted him with old age."
"Who are you?"
Goldbow asked Dolorum, while Lear, Priscilla, and Corinth came over to hug Trace. He needed Dolorum's one functioning hand around his arm to keep from falling under the weight of all the affection.
"Call me Dolorum."
Everybody except Priscilla understood what the name meant.
"But how did—"
Cassandra began.
"It's a really long story," Trace deferred, anxious for the dawn to cure his old age. "Turn on your phones. The media should know we have it back by now. We need to know where to take it."
Nebraska. Cassandra commandeered him for the car ride, arguing that only her car was worthy to carry the mighty Trace and the precious hard drive. Dolorum agreed to ride with Lear and Priscilla, while Corinth and Goldbow rode together in the Taurus. Cassandra dearly wanted to wring the story out of him, but for the first 500 miles of the trip, Trace was on the phone with a virtual who's who in the Ash Angel organization answering a myriad of questions. The most pressing, if he thought the dreads had been able to decrypt and read the drive, which he answered in the negative. In light of Trace's information, the Archai elected to leave tight security precautions in place until the tech team had a chance to give the drive a once-over, but they would halt the contingency plan put in place for a massive security breach. Once Cassandra had him to herself, Trace related the story to her, and even her jaded exterior couldn't veil the surprise at some of his revelations.
He explained his failure to treat Dahlia in such a way that she would see him as normal, and Cassandra laughed at him.
So she was gorgeous, but all you saw was red, she said.
Yeah, he answered. I didn't realize how hot she was until Dolorum, who I didn't know was Dolorum at the time, came over to tell me he was doubting my heterosexuality because of my uninterested behavior. He was trying to warn me, of course. I was too stupid to pick up on it.
Well, don't beat yourself up about it too much, Jawhead. One of the hardest things to learn as a Gabriel operative is to treat dreads like they don't have an aura. Newbies have a hard time looking dreads in the eyes or joking with them, or in your case, being a flirtatious pig when you should have been. It still doesn't explain why she gave you guys a head start. That makes no sense to me, unless you're holding back part of the story.
I was pretty cold to her, Trace explained. Well, when the dreads came over to harass her, Yeah. Cassandra laughed again, and Trace found her smile a little hard to get used to.
You are a gentleman to a lady dread. Oh, that's just fantastic. Maggie is going to love this. I am going to demand to be present when you have to go over this stuff with the Archai and operations. You are a classic, Jawhead.
Thanks. Did the Michaels pick up on the dread thrall?
They did, but in a rare display of brains, they decided to follow the thing around rather than going in for an all-out assault. I think they were still following it around until we confirmed you had Primus.
So what's this ghost site in Nebraska?
It's a place called Deep Six. Back in the 60s and 70s, it was the training center and main operational headquarters all in the same facility. For some reason, they stuck it out in the middle of nowhere, Nebraska. I've actually never been. Once they got Trevex up and running to house the training facilities in the late 80s, they built Deep 7 to serve as the central command hub. Deep 6 was sort of mothballed, waiting for a day like yesterday, I suppose. Ramus and Athena got to fly in this morning, though the nearest airport is almost 2 hours away. You and I and most everyone else get a nice little road trip. So, in honor of your mostly skillful jawheadery of the last 24 hours, notwithstanding a few somewhat hilarious mistakes, I'll let you choose the music. Unless you suggest something that totally sucks.
Do you still have Telemiran stuff?
Yeah, sure. You must be in love, Jawhead. Does Dolorum know you saved her life?
It didn't come up. She nodded.
Well, sit back and relax. I think we're at 14 delightful hours left on the road.
I'll take a turn driving if you like, Trace offered.
Not a chance. I've got a land speed reputation to maintain. You drive like the old man you were last night.
Their passage through the heart of Nebraska came in the dead of the night. Not that the landscape would have provided much to look at in broad daylight. Cassandra only had to use her beauty twice to walk her way out of speeding tickets that probably should have earned her a trip to the county lockup. Doing a 110 on a 75-mile-an-hour highway was bad, but ripping through a stop sign in sleepy Little Miller at near the speed of sound should have at least earned her a stern lecture. But her high-class looks and apologetically heaving bosom secured her a get-out-of-everything-free card whenever men were concerned. Trace secretly hoped a female officer would pull her over, so he could see how she would handle it. Thanks to her precipitously dangerous driving, they arrived at a poorly maintained gravel road about an hour before dawn, when they should have arrived an hour after. The road wound through low, brown hills spotted with snow. The washboard vibrations of the recently plowed road rattled the car. A dilapidated guard shack surrounded by a cadre of glowing auras with BBRs greeted them a few miles in where the road dipped behind a substantial hill. A handful of cars was parked off to the side, all of them filled with auraless ash angels, a line of blanks pushed off to the side. One of the guards walked forward and extended his arm, signaling for them to stop. Cassandra rolled the window down.
Ash angel IDs, please, the armed Michael said, his phone at the ready to type in the number.
Cassandra gave hers, voice impatient.
And you, sir?
Trace closed his eyes for a moment. He really hated this conversation.
I'm not in the system.
I need your aid, sir, the guard prompted sternly. It was assigned to you.
I know what an Ash Angel ID is, Trace said.
He was kept out of the system intentionally, Cassandra explained, doing a fair job of keeping her irritation under control. Look, we need to get in there right away.
Blanks aren't permitted entry at this time, he explained.
What?
Cassandra exclaimed. Sorry, ma'am. Security precaution.
Well, you might want to call in there and let them know we have that little Primus thing that's got everyone's underwear in a bunch.
I will relay the information, he confirmed robotically. Please pull off to the side.
Unbelievable, Cassandra complained after rolling up the window. They're still trying to pin this on Blanks.
You've got to admit, it's pretty much the only theory that makes any sense. A Blank is the only kind of Ash Angel that could pull off a betrayal like this without a very obvious sign that they had switched sides.
I still can't believe it, Cassandra stated. There are other explanations. I think this is a communications breach. The Ash Angels have their own communications network, and someone has hacked it. They're reading mission briefs, they're reading technical schematics, they're reading everything because we've put everything out on the network. There are a lot of ways they could have squeezed access out of someone, as you well know after your bathtub adventure. But Blanks are going to pay the price until someone figures it out.
They waited for nearly 20 minutes before a red Ford SUV drove up, Ramus stepping out and crossing over to Cassandra's caddy. You have it, he said, voice stressed.
Hello to you too, Ramus, Cassandra said pointedly.
Trace handed it over.
Can we dirty peasants come inside the castle yet, or does Trace have to save the entire Ash Angel organization before you'll vet him? Oh wait, that's right, he already did.
Ramus wasn't taking any bait. We're working on it. No favoritism, no exceptions. You should get approval inside of an hour. He and the hard drive disappeared into the SUV and drove away. Cassandra shook her head.
Wow. Can you feel the gratitude, Trace? I swear it's days like these that make me want to wrap it up and go work as a bus driver until my sixth ascendancy. Kids today are little creeps, but I could at least get a hello out of some of them.
Trace grinned. The boys, anyway. That thing you do to police officers is just wrong.
Gotta use your gifts, Jawhead.
About a half an hour passed before Cassandra received a phone call and they were cleared. The road wound a couple of miles through round hills covered in dead prairie grass before it terminated in a large asphalt parking lot broken up by age. In the very center rose a weathered concrete dome barely the size of a convenience store. On the far end of the parking lot sat an empty helipad. In the early pre-dawn light, a single red bulb strobed to guide an unseen flight. About 30 cars filled the lot to half full, and Cassandra parked as close to the dome as she could. As they stepped out into the dull Nebraska morning, a chill wind whipped past and ruffled their hair, Trace grateful he couldn't feel its icy touch. Two Michaels stood sentry outside a nondescript metal door meant to withstand a bomb blast. A number 6 was barely visible above the door. The black paint faded and flecked away. Cassandra flung the door open, and they stepped inside, the difference in air pressure banging it closed. A Michael guard sat at a thick metallic desk just inside. He looked at their faces and waved them over. You're to go to the conference room at the bottom, he informed them after checking his screen. They're starting in about 10 minutes. They've had a devil of a time getting telecom hooked up.
Is someone else coming in? Cassandra asked. We noticed the helipad was active.
Both Arcus Mars and Arcus Magdalene are due any minute now. Cassandra's face lit up.
We'll wait then. Sly girl never dropped a word that she was coming. I guess nobody's saying much of anything right now.
To pass the time, they examined the interior of the aging structure. Buzzing fluorescent lights hung from chains bolted to the ceiling, almost half the bulbs blinking or dead altogether. Cracks webbed the concrete floor and ceiling of the circular room past the guard desk, a metallic elevator platform with a rail waiting for passengers at the center. More gray metallic doors ringed the room, bits and pieces of the letters and numbers that identified them clinging to the old paint. The smell of dust pervaded everything, the particles flitting in the uneven light. Trace tried one of the rust-mottled door handles, finding it either locked or stuck. They walked until the dome above them reverberated with the beating of helicopter rotors, ceiling lights swaying with the vibration.
Hope this place doesn't fall on us, Cassandra commented as they walked back toward the entrance.
Arcus Magdalene entered after the uniformed Arcus Mars opened the door for her. Cassandra and Magdalene embraced, while Arcus Mars delivered a crushing, congratulatory handshake to Trace.
Hooah, boy!
Magdalene shook Trace's hand next.
Well done, Trace. The AAO owes you a favor.
Trace nodded. The recognition felt good. They congregated on the metal platform.
Here we go,
Mars said, yanking a stubborn lever backward. The descent began with an unsettling jerk and a whining noise that persisted all the way to the bottom.
I guess they haven't kept everything oiled, Arcus Mars shouted. So, Trace, is Archon Ramus going to let you graduate now that you saved his pencil-pushing butt? He's going to get reamed over security at this little conference.
You know he'll blame the Michaels, Arcus Magdalene warned. While he may have been the administrator of Trevex, your men were in charge of security.
Arcus Mars frowned.
If he tries to pin this on me, I'll have him filing papers in the bowels of Deep Seven.
The elevator clanged to a stop in a small anteroom with the same markers of age and decay as the one they left. Everyone stepped off, but Arcus Mars grabbed Trace's arm.
Just remember, son, the offer stands. We could use you in the Michaels.
Give it up, Mars, Arcus Magdalene admonished. He belongs to the Gabriels.
To Trace's horror, Athena waited at the bottom, dressed in her pantsuit and juggling a pile of clipboards. All the clipboards had a stack of papers a half mile high, except one that was a complete mile and a short walk. Cassandra cast a disintegrating frown at Athena and got a short stack. Trace exhaled roughly as he received the weighty one. Athena turned toward the Arcuses and signaled to the double doors.
They're about ready to begin, she said. Please come inside. We'll call for Cassandra and Trace when needed.
They all disappeared through the double doors on the opposite side of the room. Trace looked at Cassandra and shrugged, chagrined that there weren't even any chairs for them to sit on. Trace slumped against a wall.
Seems like a place like this would have a closet of those beat-up folding chairs.
How in the hell did they come up with all these forms? Cassandra moaned. Trevex was destroyed, and this place has been non-functional for over 2 decades. I swear the woman can produce a stack of BS to fill out simply by wishing it into existence. Maybe it's some new bestowal no one's heard of. Forms from hell or something.
I'm pretty sure only Dreads would get that bestowal.
I'm gonna be down in this hole filling these out until summer.
Cassandra joined him against the wall, and they got to work. Trace answered the questions curtly to spare himself as much torture as possible. If only he could type it in, it wouldn't be so bad. But he was as slow at forms as he was at morphing.
Jarhead, you know that you stick your tongue out when you write, right?
Cassandra said.
Yeah, shut up.
Trace hadn't even put a dent in his stack before the door swung open and Athena stepped out.
Trace, Cassandra, you've been summoned.